On this edition of WBOI's Field Notes, Victoria Jacobson drops by to discuss girls' swimming state finals before helping us catch up on the high school basketball tournaments. Another Indiana locality is entering the race to bring the Chicago Bears to the Hoosier State. I'll have more on that. Then I'll close with notes on the Comets, basketball, and more. That's all next on Field Notes. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Zach Bernard. Victoria Jacobson is here to help us get started as well. Thanks as always for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
We talked a lot about Carroll Girls Swimming's historic road to the state finals last week. State finals took place over the weekend. How'd they do?
Well, I'm not sure that this is going to come as a surprise to anybody. Carmel did win its 40th state championship in a row.
Unbelievable.
There is nothing even remotely close to it in any sport in any state in the United States. However, Carroll and Fishers tied for second. So another second place finish for Carroll, second year in a row. And both of them were 99.5 points back of Carmel. So Carmel finished with 326.7. And then we had Fishers and Carroll finishing with 227. Much, much, much closer than it has been at any point since for several decades. So it's still a very, very good day for Carroll. They finished with 4 wins, which is a really, really big deal at an event where there are, you know, only 12 events. So a really, really great day for the Chargers. They had a couple of individual champions in Kate Fetters and Maris Williams. Williams won the 50 with Fetters coming in second. And then Fetters won the 100 freestyle with Williams coming in second. So each of them kind of get their moment in the sun. And then those two were also part of the winning 200 free relay and the 400 free relay. So just a really, really exciting day all around for the Chargers.
You've been covering a lot of boys basketball over the last week. Let's start with Northside. They've been red hot lately, and you got to see them earlier this week.
Yes. So Northside had a bit of a rough start to the season. They are back being coached under Coach Shabazz Khalik. But again, rough start. I believe opened 1-6 this season. But with their win over Heritage last night, they are 9-1 in their last 10 games. I have only lost that one game over the past month. So are looking pretty good after a 71-51 win and are heading in the right direction as we get closer and closer to sectionals. Northside only has 3 games left. Most of our teams are kind of in that zone where maybe they've got one conference game left, or maybe they've even finished up their conference slate, but we are trending towards sectionals, and that's kind of the be-all, end-all here in Indiana. Now, Northside, because of that rough start, and because they did play some of those conference games early in the season, are out of the running for the SAC title, which makes them unique because there were quite a few teams that were in the SAC race as recently as last Friday. But we're going to talk about that a little bit. So on Friday, Southside, which had just lost to Bishop Lohr's on Tuesday, turns the tables, gets a big win over Wayne, and finishes up their SAC slate with 2 losses. So Southside is in the clubhouse with 2 losses, and Snyder also in the clubhouse with 2 losses. So they're both 7-2. However, Southside has a head-to-head win over Snyder. So they're technically tied, but if it comes to a tiebreaker, the Archers would prevail. And then we have both Homestead and Carroll with 2 losses. So Homestead and Carroll are going to be playing each other this Friday, one of the best rivalries in the area. And if Homestead wins, then the Chargers will also be 7-2, but they have a win over Southside. So then we would have a 3-way tie to wrap up our SAC season. However, if Carroll wins, and then if Carroll completes its season with a win over Bishop Lohr's, then Carroll would be 7-2 alongside Southside and Snyder. However, Southside has head-to-head wins over both Snyder and Carroll. So Southside would be the outright conference champions. So this caused quite a bit of confusion on Friday when everybody was trying to figure out what is everybody's record, what are the various permutations of what could happen in the games remaining, seeing as some teams had no games, some teams had two SAC games, and some teams had one SAC game remaining. But it's all gonna work out in the end once we get all these games in the barn. So looking forward to that.
Meanwhile, on the girls' side, you got to see Norwell continue to make its way through the 4A tournament. How are they doing?
There are some moments that just kind of take your breath away and you just kind of have to hand it to them. And that was Norwell in this game. They played Snyder, again, a sectional champ, one of the very top teams in the SAC. And not only that, but Snyder played really a very, very good game on Saturday in the regional championship at Belmont. So the first quarter or so was really, really impressive. We had Vanessa Rossworm. She dropped 13 points in that first quarter for Norwell. Jenea Cooper of Snyder, 13 points. It felt like this was going to be a barn burner. And then Norwell just could not miss. I actually don't know what their shooting percentage was, but it was just off the charts. I was talking to their coach, Eric Thornton, after the game, and he said that, you know, what you're trying for is basically getting to 1 point per possession. That's kind of the goal. And he said, you know, their offensive efficiency must have been significantly, significantly, significantly above 1 point per possession. They were shooting so well. They were moving the ball so well. They were defending really effectively. I cannot say enough about this Norwell team, how mature they looked, just how unflappable they looked, how they were doing, even when they were being defended. This wasn't a failure by Snyder by any means. And still, Norwell comes away with a 90-56 win. It was, honestly, it was kind of beautiful, just the way Norwell was playing. And it really started to make you think, like, can this team do it? There hasn't been a team that has won a 3A state title, moved up because of success factor, and then won a 4A state title. But it really, really looked like this is a team that has, if they hit their ceiling, that could do it. And Eric Thornton, the Norwell coach, after the game said, you know, he said championship pedigree, I think this team has, and I think they've always had it. And when you watch a game like that, I mean, how could you doubt them?
So what's next for Norwell and the tournament as a whole?
Well, yeah, I think it is time to talk a little bit about semi-state because we have four teams still alive, one in each classification, which is very neat and tidy. The only thing that is a complication is trying to figure out which of the four semi-states I am going to cover in which order. But let's run through this. So Class 4A, all the way over in La Porte. As somebody suggested, Normal might want to get the buses warmed up now and maybe head out now. But Norwell will be opening against Crown Point in the noon game, and then winner advances to play either Northridge or McCutcheon. In 3A, we have Belmont. We didn't mention Belmont earlier. Belmont beat their NEA rival East Noble for the second time this season, also very handily, to earn their first regional title since 1993. So their reward is that they get to go to the 3A semi-state at Logansport, where they will play Culver Academies. They get the morning game. That is a huge bonus. Gives you 2 extra hours to recover before the 8 p.m. championship. And then they will face either Connersville or Fairfield. So then in 2A, we have Whitco, 25-1. Whitco had never won so much as a sectional before last year. Now they're back at semi-state for the second year in a row. Great story for the Wildcats. They will play Oak Hill at noon. And then the winner advances to play either LaPelle or Bremen. And then Class A, we have Fremont. Fremont took down number one Marquette Catholic. Absolute shocker in our small school bracket. The Eagles are moving on to Monroe Central. Somebody's got to win that one, and then they will play North Miami versus or Elkhart Christian at the Huntington North semi-state. Something to keep in mind, all four of our remaining teams are the top-ranked team in their classification in their semi-state. So I think that we could reasonably expect at least one, maybe several winners coming out of this weekend. So it's really, really exciting. Only problem is trying to figure out where to be because I want to be at all of them. But that's a good problem to have.
And we're seeing awards handed out as tournament season carries on. The NECC All-Conference honors were announced this week. What were some highlights?
All right. So I think that this will surprise nobody based on how long I rhapsodized about it. But I should start with Vanessa Rossworm. She was the IBCA Player of the Week. That's what happens when you score 36 points in a regional championship game. Very exciting and well-deserved there. And Fremont, winning their first regional championship since 1999, they were a Team of the Week from the IBCA. So that's also really exciting. Eastside, they were the ones who fell to Whitco in that regional championship. However, the Blazers still led the NECC Girls All-Conference selections, which came out this week. So the Eastside Blazers, Taylor Mack, Lucy Kitchen, and senior Adelaide Eldon all made first team. And then their teammate Addison Moogler was an honorable mention. And then Fremont, who we just mentioned, winning that regional championship in 1A, had two all-conference honorees in Grace Scarlack and Maya Turner. And then Chloe Verdon and Haley Heller were their honorable mentions. And again, those girls are going to be playing for a semi-state championship on this Saturday.
Victoria Jacobson, covering all angles of local sports for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
As the state of Illinois, Gary, and most recently Iowa make overtures toward the Chicago Bears in an effort to get the team to choose them as a permanent home, another Indiana community has entered the chat. WVPE's Michael Gallenberger reports on a new proposal out of Portage.
The city's unveiled a proposal for a 300-acre development it's calling Hallis Harbor. It would be located near US 12, State Road 249, I-94, and the South Shoreline. A flashy video shows a domed stadium and new developments near the city's marina.
The capital is ready. The land is available now. Shovels can be in the ground as soon as June 2026. The only variable left is the decision to move forward.
The city of Portage says the stadium can be built through private financing without the need for taxpayer dollars and offered to the Bears rent-free. Portage would face competition from Hammond and Gary, which are closer to the Illinois state line. I'm Michael Gallenberger in Elkhart.
The Fort Wayne Comets had a tremendous weekend. They had three games with a possible 6 points on the table, and they took all six. And these were big wins. Four of those points came against the Central Division's fourth seed, Indy Fuel, to create a bit more distance there. But even bigger was Sunday's win against Toledo, which now puts them in a tie with the Walleye at the top of the division with 61 points. It's a good place to be as the weather warms up and the season starts to enter its home stretch. Only two road games this weekend, but not a terrible amount of travel. They're headed to Norfolk to square off against the Admirals on Friday and Saturday. Both games have a 7:05 puck drop. They'll also be in Wheeling next Wednesday night to face the Nailers. Still 28 games left on the calendar, so there's a lot of time for things to change in either direction for the Comets. Let's hope they can keep their grip on the top of the Central Division. The ECHL regular season ends on Sunday, April 19th. The NBA All-Star Game over the weekend was a lot of fun, but I always think the NBA puts on the best All-Star showcase of all the major sports anyway. Only thing I didn't like was the 5 p.m. start time. The Pacers are back in action against teams of similar record, so maybe they'll be good games. It's off to a weird start, though, with back-to-back nights in D.C. to face off against the 14-39 Washington Wizards at 7 each night, before returning home Sunday to host the 19-35 Dallas Mavericks at 5. Purdue's rough stretch continues with another loss, this time to Michigan on Tuesday night. They are 21-5 now on the season and have fallen to number 7 nationally as conference tournament season gets closer and closer. That's less than 2 weeks from now, actually. The first conference tourney tips off on Monday, March 2nd. I'm starting to get excited. And as a fan of women's basketball, we still don't have much clarity on whether or not the WNBA season will begin on time, or if we'll have one at all in 2026, which is a bummer. But if you haven't been watching the Unrivaled League, which airs games on TNT, I'd highly recommend it. It's the best women's basketball players participating in 3-on-3 games. It's a really fun time. That's all for Field Notes this week. Field Notes comes out every Thursday. We'll see you next week. I'm Zach Bernard.
Music for Field Notes is produced by Jack Ankenbrook. You can support this podcast anytime at wboi.org/donate. You and I are listening to WBOI.